I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mike Lubick of the New York Daily News and MLB.com.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and welcome to the Sports Reporters Podcast Monday edition. We do this every Monday and Friday. Glad to have you joining us. And Game 1 is in the books for the Eastern Conference Finals, and not unfamiliar, Cleveland down, but that was a thumping by the Boston Celtics. What do we make of the performance yesterday by this young, starless team?
Mitch, one time in the past, a big NBA Finals between the Celtics and the Lakers, there was a blowout about this time of the year, was there not, Ryan? And I believe Mr. Ryan's lead the next day in the Boston Globe went something like this. It's the first time he ever stammered into a story, but this was a stammer-like performance by both teams yesterday, Bobby.
It was devastating, 25-2 run. I mean, some of the computations there were historic and enormous, and you can say no one saw it coming. No, you know, you never say you see anything like this coming when there was any semblance of competition. But the fact is that there's history that we have now, a 72-year history of this league, and things like this do happen. And my first instinct was to caution the fans not to get carried away. You enjoy it? Sure. Oh, absolutely. And Brad Stevens knows as well as anybody, but I've lived through two of them in Boston alone. In 1982, the Celtics' first game won against Philadelphia, 121, Philadelphia 81. That's a 40-point victory. Mm. Game two, Philadelphia 121, Boston 113, and Philly won the series in seven.
Yeah.
1985, Boston 148, Los Angeles 114 in game one. Game two, 3 days later, L.A. 109, Boston 106, L.A. wins in six. Boston 102, L.A. wins in six. I'm a little cautious here. Very, very impressive, but it doesn't matter ultimately if they win by 35, 40, or one.
Well, I'm going to be consistent in what I've been saying throughout these NBA playoffs. You have to get the games off of LeBron James that you have to get. Game one at home is that you have to get. So to me, whether they won by one or one by 25, they had to put this in the books. You remember we talked about the Indiana series. I said that series ended up being lost in game two and being really lost in game five. And these were the moments when, you know, they had them down and they didn't let them up. If Cleveland comes back and says, okay, that's out of our system, and they win on Boston's home floor, Cleveland is definitely the favorite in my mind continuing. In fact, they still remain to be the favorite because you've got to beat LeBron James four times. We always say this. I saw a comment that I'm curious what your guys' thoughts were, that LeBron was very sanguine about all this. And he says, you know, I've been through game one losses before, and I like to kind of feel out the series. You know, like he's kind of, all right, how are they playing me? What's this going to go? And he's gotten to the point where he doesn't care if they drop a game or even two, if he thinks that he can figure it out. Does he have that capability to adjust enough that he can afford to drop a game in a series? And it is he, because let's face it, if he's not great, they're not winning.
Well,
historically, I'd say he's got a right to say this. We'll see. This particular Celtic team has some components that are going to make it more difficult for him to get it done the way he wants to do it than it has been with other teams. With the number of rotating athletic people that they have, so we'll see. I mean, I thought Dana Barros, who is, of course, a former Celtic, a 14-year NBA player, has already gone on record and said he thinks what LeBron's going to do in the next game to change things up is post up more. Play more out of the post. Utilize his ability to go inside out with passing and do what he has to do scoring-wise. And so we'll see if that's an adjustment. We know one thing. There will be a change. There'll be an adjustment. And that's why these series are fascinating, because they are absolutely, right. It's no BS. They're all about adjustments. And here's the most adjustable player in the league.
But here's the thing. The most interesting adjustments to me are always between game one and game two. And they tell you how the rest of the series is going to go. The Raptors really made no adjustments and ended up getting swept. Okay. Everybody can be surprised by the extent of the result yesterday, but nobody can be surprised at the youth, athleticism, and length of the Boston Celtics. And I have a feeling that LeBron's looking at the other team and saying, where can I get some of those guys? Because he's making his last stand in Cleveland with Tristan Thompson and Kyle Korver and Kevin Love and even J.R. Smith. And here comes Jason Tatum, and here comes Jaylen Brown, and here comes all these guys, and anybody who was surprised at the way they got after it on defense, hasn't been watching the rest of the playoffs. And the beauty of sports, is that Marcus Morris, who started out his professional career essentially with the Rio Grande Valley Vipers, okay, can be the best player in the gym in a day when the best player in the world is in the gym. 21 points, 10 rebounds. He was great. Bob and Mitch, he was great defending on the ball. He was great defending switches. It was an eye-opening performance from him yesterday.
All the defense was great. And I mean, I'll answer
your
question.
Yeah, but he was the guy on LeBron. Yeah.
Well, most of the time. I'll answer your question. How can I get some of these guys? Get Danny Ainge. You know, that's how you get some of these guys. Get Danny Ainge. Get Brad Stevens. And you'll look like the Boston Celtics. But it makes me think, Mike, and while you were talking, I thought, you know, that's a really interesting point. LeBron is a big picture guy. We've talked a lot about him going to the West and having to take on Golden State then every year. Does he really want to do that when he seems to have a coast every year in the East? Well, he might be looking at the Boston Celtics and saying, okay, they got this team now, and Kyrie Irving and Hayward are sitting on the bench. I'm not so sure if I
come
back
next year. And the other team in Philly isn't going
right
anywhere either.
So it may not. It may be like pick your poison at this point. It's not such a clear path for the Cleveland Cavaliers anymore. And maybe he figures, you know, this is all after this is done. Maybe he figures I might as well. If there's ever time to go to the West, the East is getting loaded, and we're not the team that's getting loaded. That's something to think about, because they are doing this without their two star players. And it does make you wonder what they're going to be like when those guys come back.
I have a solution for him. Go to Philadelphia. I've said that for 3 months. So it would make a lot of technical sense. It's his best technical option, thankfully. You know,
not his best
by the way, Mitch,
option.
Mitch, even when Kyrie comes back next year, and even with his playoff and NBA Finals portfolio, I'm not sure he's going to be the second best player on the team, because I think Jason Tatum is going to get better and better, and he's a rocket to the moon.
And 21-year-old Jaylen Brown. I mean, these kids are. They're just
getting legal to drink now.
Let me
ask you this, and let me ask you, Bob, this, okay? Because I said this on Friday's podcast when I was talking to Jordan Schultz. No matter what happens this year, and no matter what happens in the West, and maybe the Rockets will dominate, and maybe the Warriors will dominate, when you look at Hayward coming back, and you look at Kyrie coming back, is there any way whoever is the NBA champion this year that the Celtics won't be as much of a favorite to win it all next year as anybody from the West?
Well, that's up to Vegas for if you want to get down to, you know, and we'll see. But I think certainly in the East, they're shaping up. The only rival would be Philly themselves, depending on what they do. They need to get another component. But absolutely, and we've already, you know, you have to play this game if you're a fan. You're crazy. You're thinking about next year, and you're looking at this embarrassment of riches in terms of talent, and you're wondering about playing time. You went, boy, is Brad going to earn his money next year, trying to figure out how to, you know, in the best of all worlds, these guys are all going to fit nicely into the roles that will be assigned to them, and they'll be happy. Terry Rozier, it's just one of those, how are you going to keep him down the farm? He's going to have to cut back from the big minutes he's playing to something else, substantially less with Irving back. Of course, that presupposes he won't be playing with Irving at different times. I mean, but all these are incredible thoughts that we have here,
Bob,
with this team. And by
Bob,
the way, they also have a potential
draft pick
from the Lakers.
Okay, but before we do the big picture stuff and spin this thing ahead, let's talk about the game that started this conversation, which is yesterday's game, because it was a fascinating basketball game. And who would have, if somebody had told you, forget that LeBron was going to score 15 points, okay? If somebody was going to tell you that the Celtics were not only going to beat the Cavaliers, but throw them down a mineshaft with only four players on their team being in double figures, you would have laughed.
Yeah, I'm going to throw one other thing out there's why Stevens is a great coach for the time, and that is that Marcus Morris got two quick fouls.
Yes,
And this is a league, going back to our mutual friend Michael John McLeod, going back 40 years ago when he became the first panic guy, that once you got two, it was a death sentence for the half. Two fouls were a death sentence for the half. You were not going to be seen the rest of the half with two little chintzy fouls. Marcus Morris stays in with the two, and look what happened. I mean, I hope this reverberates around the league. I mean, because these guys are just. But anyway, I'm digressing there. No one saw that them being thrown down the old mine shaft that way. But what people saw was the full scope of what they're capable of at both ends of the floor. The defense, the great defense to offense transition, the finishing ability of people, tall and small, and no, not a great shooting team ordinarily, but when they do shoot well, then, oh my, then they seldom lose.
Well, let's remember, there's no excuses with regard to fatigue. You know, this is a game I would have expected if Cleveland had gone 7 with Toronto and then had to go up to Boston to play. And, you know, game one is sort of like hangover game. But everybody had 4 or 5 days to rest. So there's none of that. And a 25-2 burst in the first quarter, I'm not sure what you're seeing anytime after that is real, because Cleveland is a veteran enough team to know we're not coming back from this. And so, you know, the game that they put up is not going to be the game that they put up in two. And Boston just got giddy, you know, and they're, you know, when the pressure's more on, I'm not sure they're going to hit 63.6% of their shots as they did in the first quarter, but we'll see what happens with game two.
And here's the thing.
Let's not forget one other important part of the game, which was it did get down to 14 at the end of the quarter, third quarter, with a 12-3 run. And you know, it wasn't inconceivable. And imagine the repercussions of blowing a 26-point lead. Yeah. But how did the Celtics respond? They scored the first 7 points of the fourth quarter and ended any panic.
And we all talk about we all focus on the losing team making adjustments after game one, except the guy I think is the best basketball coach working, he gets to make adjustments too, knowing that they're going to make adjustments. And yes, it may be a different game, but who knows what Stevens comes up with for game mm-hmm. two. And
yeah, comes here. We can assume we're going to get a heavier dose of Tristan Thompson, who has been known to hurt them in the past, particularly in the offensive boards. Therefore, you may see a little bit more Aaron Baines, who was the name never came up yesterday, but before this series is over, he will be heard from.
Yeah. And how about Marcus Morris? Marcus Morris, and I didn't think he was saying it in a big, strutting, cocky way. He had made the statement going into this game that he thought he and Kawhi Leonard guarded LeBron the best. And then the guy goes out and backs it up. People forget what an interesting backstory Marcus Morris has. I mean, he and his twin brother wanted to play together, and now Markieff is a pretty good player with the Wizards now. He averaged 11-5 this year. And you always see how somebody is going to respond in the biggest moment of their athletic life. And in a lot of ways, that is what Marcus Morris had yesterday. And I'm not even suggesting that he'll do it again. And I can remember when LeBron was with the Heat and he went in a game six. And boy, it was about 48. He put 48 on the Celtics
45
one time.
And yeah, just a mere 45 or 15.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, Marcus Morris actually backed it up yesterday and played mm-hmm. the kind of defensive game that he said he was capable of playing against the King.
Yeah, for one game. LeBron will take this slow and watch it carefully, and there'll be plenty of games in this series that LeBron's going to explode, and then people will say, what are they going to do to guard him? But for one game, yeah.
That's actually being played.
Right.
And if we had prognosticated about this game one going in, I don't think anybody would have said, oh, yeah, well, he's going to go for 15. So, yes, is it logical off of track record that LeBron will light it up in game two? Yes. And I wouldn't be remotely surprised. But yes, it is one game, but it was an extremely important game to the Boston Celtics because, as you started out this conversation by saying, they couldn't lose game one at home.
All right, over in the West, tonight we get the series that everybody's been waiting for. Some said that, you know, it would almost be a finals in and of itself, the Rockets against the Warriors. I saw an amazing statistic on this thing. I didn't know. You probably read the same story. The Warriors, since signing Kevin Durant, have lost 3 times total in the playoffs. They're 24-3 in the playoffs, and Houston has to beat them 4 times. That would be more times than they have lost since Kevin Durant has been with them in the postseason. That is an amazing thing. Can Houston get 4 games off of these guys?
I'm not even sure this. I may be dead wrong about this. We can all have a great laugh with this. I was talking about this with Jordan the other day. I do not believe the series is going to go 7. I believe that when Steph Curry is healthy, the sides are not even. I believe that the Warriors have far more weapons. I have a great deal in confidence in Steve Kerr in finding a way to, if not contain James Harden, to manage him. I just think, yes, I know the Rockets were 7 games better during the regular season. Steph Curry missed 31 basketball games. He is one of the best players on the planet. I believe he is healthy now, and if he is healthy, I think the Warriors are a far superior team to a team that won 65 regular season games.
Can you see a 5-game series?
Again, Mitch, well, I think we'll have a better idea after game one. I really do. But when I look at what you just said about the Warriors' stats since they got Durant, all that stuff, okay? And there were times, Bob and Mitch, last year, we thought they were going to run the table. We thought they were going to win the championship, maybe without losing a game. And I just think the Warriors are laying for these guys. And again, I could be dead wrong. The Rockets could be better than I think they are. But when I look at the Rockets, I'll just throw this one other thing. There are 3 guys who have to slay a dragon in this series. 3 important guys for the Rockets. The coach, Mike D'Antoni, who had never won a championship. James Harden, who has never won a championship. And Chris Paul, who has never been this far.
I think I have to be Mr. Echo here for the large part. I'll just frame it this way. During the course of this excellent regular season the Rockets had, winning their 65 and having a lot of some nights that were boxcar numbers are just phenomenal stuff, I said, that's fine, enjoy yourselves. But I still think that when the core four of Golden State is ready and healthy and ready to go, they're the best, period. I don't think it's going to go 7. I think they're going to, assuming that Curry is in fact healthy, we have to take everything at face value here. They're telling us if he is in fact healthy and they're all ready to go, then there's no. Then I would be very surprised for them to lose the series.
Look at the first two. They lost 1 to San Antonio when it was a pride game. The series was already over. They lost 1 to the Pelicans when they went back to New Orleans, which is usually game 3 is frequently when that happens. You play your first game at home, and otherwise they won all their games. For Houston, now Houston will tell you they built themselves to beat Golden State. That's what they did. That's why they have done what they've. That's why they went after Chris Paul. They got Clint Capella. When Harden, Clint Capella, and Chris Paul are all clicking, and by the way, that doesn't always happen at the same time, they are potent. Let's not, especially Capella is underrated. They do make things difficult. But if James Harden reverts to step back jumpers and trying to beat you from that all the time, instead of constantly pressuring, getting in, as he and Chris Paul, when they're on their game, can do, then they're going to be in trouble. Remember, Harden's got a little ghost, the San Antonio series, to live down himself, even though he's been to a finals. So I do think, Mike, though, that's a pretty formidable trio, those three. And they didn't win all those games by accident this year. I think they could get 2. I agree with you. I do not see Golden State losing to anybody, including Cleveland or Boston. But I think they can go 6.
The Warriors 4 is going up against the Rockets 3. And I understand it's a 5-man game. To me, the fascinating figure in this series is Chris Paul. This is the moment that he has waited his own athletic life for. And I was talking to a coach the other day, and with no skin in this game, okay? And he said, Chris Paul is in an ideal situation because he can't be the best player on your team. Okay, he doesn't have to be the best player in Houston. But he has got to, in this series, he has, even as a point guard, he's got to play Steph to Durant or Durant to Steph with Harden. And if he does not, I can't see any path for them to the NBA Finals.
Well, I think we're all in agreement. I'm waiting for them. We need to put a Houston guy on this show.
If you watch this over the course of
this. How do you pick against them?
The 3 years or so since Durant joined this team, I mean, how can you come to any other conclusion that those 4 guys are I won't say unbeatable, but they're going to beat you more often than not.
Draymond is, and I mean this in all the positive ways, okay? And we know about his successes. It will always be on his resume that he cost him a championship. He's the joker in the deck. They've got a guy who's a triple-double machine. And Capella's terrific. And he's become more of a pro than I ever thought he was going to be. But the Warriors' third guy is Draymond, whose skill set is, it's not unique, but right now in this sport, it's pretty damn formidable. And I think that I'm looking for Draymond to have a huge series.
Yeah. Well, they just have too many weapons for too many angles. But things do happen. You know, Draymond gets technical, or, you know, he gets tossed out of a game. Steph Curry tweaks a knee. I mean, that's the only way that I think that Houston has a chance, is that something has to trip the Golden State Warriors somewhere along the way besides them. I just don't see them beating. Once I read that thing that you lost three total times with Durant, I said, yeah, four, how are you going to get four? And it's going to have to begin in game one tonight. I mean, they're going to have to beat them, or they're going to have to put up a hell of a show and scare them, because, you know, you already get down one, and now you got to beat them four times in six games. That's not likely. So, really, I hate to say game one is a must game for anybody, but it could very well be for the Houston Rockets.
And did you see this? I saw this stat on Twitter from the Lubega boys, but it was a retweet today. Bob, did you see this? What the Warriors record is in games officiated by Scott Foster? It's like 7-7, and in games he doesn't officiate, it's in the playoffs, it's like 41-7. It's like, it's one of the craziest stats I've seen all year.
It's funny you mention that, because I heard an allusion that included Foster this morning on the radio, and I didn't know what it was in reference to. So now I know.
Well, when we're talking about the referees, it's time for me to make an exit. I apologize, but I've got to take a fast run to do a charity thing here in Detroit. So I'm going to leave the rest of the podcast to you guys,
right,
and be back with you on Friday. Thanks for everything,
terrific,
guys, and handing off.
Okay, all Mitch, right. Have a good day. Have a good event with you, okay?
Michael, you know, we haven't mentioned that Houston's got the home court.
Okay, but Bob, okay, here's the stat.
As a factor.
Here's the stat, okay? And I, again, I have no way of checking this, but it comes from today on social media. Since 2015, the Warriors' record in the playoffs, when Scott Foster is officiating, 7-7. When Scott Foster is not officiating the playoff game, 48-10. All right, listen.
And we're supposed to be drawing a conclusion from that, Mike. Is that what
I don't know. I don't know, Bob. Listen, today's episode of the Sports Report is sponsored by Mattress Firm. Everyone knows how important stretching is before an event. So does Mattress Firm, except it's your dollar. Your budget stretches further at Mattress Firm. So shop at America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. It's a true home run. They're the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise. But know this, they are more than mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed, from adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor. They have you literally and figuratively covered up, like Marcus Morris covered up LeBron yesterday. Go to mattressfirm.com to see what deals are happening. They even offer you a 120-night sleep trial. Bob, the Raptors could use this to ensure perfection, and a 120-night low-price guarantee, so you know you pay the perfect price. Talk about a 1-2 punch. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to Mattress Firm and use the mattressfirm.com and use the code podcast10 for 10% off. The code is only valid through June 5th, so don't miss out. Get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow, only at Mattress Firm. Bob, there's a very interesting story going on with a guy who worked in Boston for a long time as one of Bill Belichick's top lieutenants, and that is the new head coach of the Detroit Lions, Matt Patricia, who is now having to deal with the fact that he and a friend were indicted for a sexual assault, alleged sexual assault, over 20 years ago on a spring break in a small town in Texas. Now, Patricia denies this thing up and down. He said he's never had a chance to clear his name. I don't know what stopped him at the time. The case never went to court because the accuser didn't want to put herself through a trial and all the public examination would come, which often happens in cases like this. Bob, here's my question about this, okay? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot to unpack here, but here's my question. We're talking about a league where they think it's okay in a draft interview to ask a player whether he's gay or not. These are guys who lose their minds if they find out that their heart's desire outside linebacker smoked a couple of joints in college. And you mean to tell me that nobody, this never came to light? So that they're doing better background checks on some 21-year-old kid out of Oklahoma State than they are a potential head coach in the National Football League?
Yeah, you know, of course, you know, we had him here for years in Boston. Never a whiff or hint of this. This is such a stunning revelation that such a thing ever happened and that he was involved in any such thing. Obviously, I'm not discussing or making a judgment on guilt. But just the idea that there was an incident, something happened, he was involved in it, that it's certainly in a tenor of these times is something that you would that has to be examined, is going to be examined, I should say, as well. He hasn't handled himself perfectly well with in his response to this, I don't think. His protestations of innocence are fine, but the way that this has managed to be not part of the dialogue ever in 22 years, is given the vetting that's supposed to be done, is remarkable. Yes, it is. And when you read, you know, you do read certain things. Well, let's face it, he was indicted and it was dropped for the simple reason that the victim chose not to testify.
I'm reading from Yahoo Sports. According to the court documents obtained by the Detroit Free Press, Mitch's newspaper, the witness list included a nurse, doctor, police detective, police officer, and a college friend of the alleged victim. Accounts from the five helped lead to an indictment by a grand jury of Matt Patricia and a college friend named Greg Dietrich on charges of aggravated sexual assault. And as Bob just said, the charges were ultimately dismissed 10 months later after the incident when the victim decided she couldn't take the stress. And the details are these, that it is alleged that Patricia and Dietrich burst into this woman's hotel room and took turns sexually assaulting her during spring break in 1996 at South Padre Island, Texas. There are no deep records of this now. The police department in South Padre, Texas, says that they only keep these things for 10 years. And Bob, listen, again, he is allowed to defend himself. He is allowed to defend himself. He's allowed to say that this did not happen. But just because he says this did not happen doesn't mean it didn't happen. And I remember when Pete Hamill, the great Pete Hamill, was the editor of the New York Daily News. And there was an incident where Eric Williams and Michael Irvin were accused by a woman of raping her at gunpoint. One held the one gun while the other, and so on and so forth. And there was this amazing rush to judgment at the time. And Pete said to me at the time, accusations are not arrests. Arrests are not indictments. And indictments are not convictions. And what he was saying to me is, you know, and people wanted these guys thrown out of the league, and guys I respect in the business, Bob, wrote those columns, okay, in big platforms. And Pete said, let's just take a step back and do a little more reporting on this and see what happens. And it turned out that the woman was a fabulist and she made the whole thing up. And again, that because she was, doesn't mean the woman accusing Dietrich and Patricia are. But again, just because he's outraged and says it didn't happen doesn't mean it happened. But how the hell did nobody know this?
I don't know. That part we don't know. And here's, you know, the overall, you know, overview of the situation in general terms is that our life experience, yours, mine, everybody listening, our logic tells us that this sounds real bad, and we don't, and we're wary of it because we know that there is a history of women on being in the final analysis who are assaulted being unwilling to go through a trial process for quite obvious reasons, and they drop the charges and the thing goes away. That happens. We don't know that. Now, this is what happened in this case. Logic is not 100% accurate, though. Logic is only 99.9% accurate. As you just described, a circumstance where the logic was wrong, and the person was innocent.
And at that time, in the culture of the Dallas Cowboys back in the 90s, you could see this story in the first headline and say, yeah, that sounds like something the Cowboys might have done.
But the problem for him is going to be now that it is out, and we'll get back to why it isn't out, which we don't know why it wasn't out, is that because the logic is generally on the side of that these accused are generally guilty more often than they're not guilty. There's a thing called the court of public opinion that, as we all know, is the adjudicator in the O.J. Simpson case for most of, I should say, white America, at least. We don't care what the jury said. You know, we don't care about the Menendez brothers, what the jury said. We don't care. And there are local trials where we don't care what the jury said. We think we know better by instinct and common sense and so on and so forth. He's now in a category. I don't know how he escapes from this. Do you?
No, he's in a bad spot because, Bob, the more vociferously he proclaims his innocence, he also risks, even though the young woman 22 years ago did not want to continue on with the case, okay, he risks her coming forward now. And to me, that would be his worst nightmare. Here's what he said in a statement released by the Lions the other day. This is Matt Patricia, their new head coach. As someone who was falsely accused of this very serious charge over 22 years ago and never given the opportunity to defend myself and clear my name, I find it incredibly unfair, disappointing, and frustrating that this story would resurface now with the only purpose being to damage my character and reputation. I firmly maintain my innocence as I have always done. Okay, that's fair enough. But I have a feeling that this young woman, if this happened, thinks it was incredibly unfair and disappointing and frustrating that these guys could have burst into a hotel room and done what she says they did to her.
I know. Well, the problem, of course, you weren't there. I wasn't there. Nobody listening was there. As I said, I just summarized what I was, just said, that we know that these are all too frequent occurrences. They occur far too frequently. They always have, and they still do. And that most of the time, not all the time, most of the time, the accusations are correct. And that and it's a hideous thing. And it's really tough. But back to the thing, I don't know how this was not ever.
It's amazing, Bobby. It's
I have no
crazy.
Idea. I mean, this is such a gobsmack for us in Boston because, what was the side story with Matt Patricia? One thing, rocket scientist, literally, okay, and then, of course, he's got this great, he's a folk hero image with the beard and the pencil, like a upcountry grocer, the pencil behind his ear and all that. And he's got an image, and he's a terrific defensive coordinator, but that's his image. He had a fixed image, but now this is tacked onto it, and it's going to be, I don't know, the Lions so far are standing behind them, but, there might be some pressure coming that they may have to, change their mind. I don't know.
And Bob, I'll get back to what I said. What kind of vetting process goes on in this league, especially with an indictment about something like this, whether the indictment got eventually tossed or not? Again, they sit in rooms and they will parse a young man's life, okay? Who's the age that Patricia was supposed to have been when this allegedly happened, okay? And again, whether it's a joint or a speeding ticket one time, that we hear all the time that, oh my God, we must have all the possible information to make something as important as a first round draft choice. Well, guess what? Matt Patricia was a first round coaching draft choice who could have gone to the likely could have gone to the Giants, ended up going to the Lions, and now he says it's a big lie. Okay, he says it's a big lie. But what seems to be the big lie here, Robert, is that the NFL knows everything about everybody.
Yeah, well, and they're supposed to have all these private detectives and all that, but are they applied to coaches as opposed to players? I mean, that's a good question right now. I think that would be our question. We know that you use detectives. We know that you try to vet these kids because you don't want to have a wasted draft pick or a wrong draft pick. But do you apply the same standard to coaches? My guess is the answer is no. It never dawned on them to do that. We will now. Even, you know, because this is not a matter of you know, just isn't George O'Leary claiming, you know, he had a degree and he didn't have a degree and one of those kind of, you know, things. This is not a resume doctoring. This is a far more serious charge. From now on, I think that this won't happen. I don't think this is going to happen again, Mike. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, Bob, and you know, it's funny. Just as you said O'Leary, I was thinking about that, okay? And he thought it would the resume doctoring would never affect him for a single day of the rest of his life. Okay, it did. But did nobody at the New England Patriots or the Detroit Lions in their interview process with Matt Patricia ask the following question? Have you ever been indicted for a crime? Have you ever been convicted of a crime? Have you ever been accused of a serious crime? Nobody asked this question?
Clearly, the answer to that is no. No one did, and I'm simply saying that this is the incident that will shine light on it, and they will have to all do it from now on because they don't want to be the next team that has to be going through this. So, no, the answer clearly is no. And as I said, they did it for players but not for coaches. That's just the way it was, but it's not the way it's going to be from now on.
Well, Bob, you're right about something.
We saw that one, huh?
This is not going to go away. Okay, no, today's episode of the Sports Report is also sponsored by Freshly. We got a lot more to talk about today. Freshly is the easiest and most convenient way to eat healthy no matter what life throws your way. So even if you're stuck at work late, you can still come home to a delicious dinner cooked by a chef. You know, Bob, and how many times have one of us said, what's that chef doing in my kitchen?
Yeah, right.
No more worrying about it. You can worry about that, but no more worrying.
The whole thing.
But the point is, Bob, the food is good. And you don't have to figure out what's left in the fridge and no mess to clean up after. Freshly chefs source the finest all-natural ingredients so they can find and then work with nutritionists to ensure their meals are as healthy as possible. You hear me talk about this all the time. Freshly's been nice enough to send a lot of food to us. It's all good. Shepherd's pie, penne, chicken parm, all that stuff. The best part about Freshly is the number of comfort meals they currently serve that are also super healthy. Customize your weekly meals from their constantly changing, rotating menu of more than 30 chef-crafted options. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. Let me tell you, there's nothing better than knowing that no matter what happens in my daily life, that I have a chef-cooked dinner waiting for me at home. Check out this week's menu created by Freshly Chefs and get $25 off your first order of 6 chef-cooked dinners plus free shipping by going to freshly.com/sportsreporters. You'll feel so relieved to come home to a chef-cooked meal every night with Freshly. That's freshly.com/sportsreporters for $25 off your first order. All right, let's go to golf, Robert, because the guy who was LeBron in professional sports in this country before LeBron is obviously Tiger Woods. And for a couple of days at Sawgrass over the weekend at the Players' Championship, which is often called the fifth major, he shook down the Thunder. And actually yesterday, despite making the cut on the number on Friday at 1-under, was only 4 strokes behind Webb Simpson. And Bob, I come at this a little different. Yes, it's exciting to watch him make a run the way he did at Bay Hill. But there's also a part of me that watches him and again, he was trying to push a big rock up the hill yesterday, that when he does get close now, he falls back.
So far, that has been the case, but I think he's inching closer. I'm so glad we're going to talk about this, and I want to I'm entering into a dangerous territory here, listeners, because I am entering a minefield entering Michael Lupica's single-digit handicap golfer's wheelhouse.
No.
Wait a minute. Here's what I see. All right, my theory is this: there is nothing more unpredictable in all of sport than who will win this week's golf tournament. No matter which tournament we're talking about, at any level.
And Webb Simpson talked about that, Bob. Webb Simpson actually talked to
a couple hundred people out there who could win a golf tournament. Hundreds. Okay, now, that's A. So anybody can win. Webb Simpson just won for the first time in 4.5 years. All right, now, my goodness, this. The common narrative for Tiger Woods in this year removed from is that he's a jag. He's just another guy. Okay. If that, my thing is that is actually a compliment compared to where he was a year ago. If he is just another, in parentheses, one of those close parentheses guys, he can still win a tournament, something I did not believe 6 months ago. Now, how are you on that?
You don't know, Bob. I listen, it's good. It's not just good for this sport. It's good for all sports to have him back in play. I laugh sometimes that perfectly reasonable, gifted people that I like and know, friends of mine from other walks of life, get turned giddier than a teenage girl at a One Direction concert every time he's in contention again, as if order has been restored to the universe. I just come at this from a different way. When he gets close, when he has gotten close this year, and it is very early in a comeback, but Bob, I always point this out, it is a comeback being undertaken by someone who is 42 and a half years old. And that's what makes this unique in a kind of way. And someone who hasn't
Now,
won a major in what, 10 years?
Absolutely. And only conversation is only remotely plausible and feasible because he is Tiger Woods, because he is among the handful of transcendent athletes in the history of the recorded mankind,
right?
And one of arguably the best who's ever done what he did at his peak, more than anybody. So he's special, and if there's a one person who at 42 and after multiple back operations and all this personal turmoil and blah 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 could do it, you'd like the reason it would be a special person that he has been over, at least that he used to be, and can he recall it one more time? And I don't have to tell you that the GOAT with 18 majors won his last at age 46. So I know he didn't have the kind of personal situation that Tiger had, but I'm just throwing it out there. And I didn't believe this. I mean, you could dredge up in various forms of print and media and electronic media me saying Tiger's done, finished, he's never going to win another thing. Until a year ago, it was positively a universal opinion. But I'm just saying, when I saw that Friday, that was the old Tiger to a degree. Saturday, half a Sunday it was. And as you say, he can't finish. Have a parentheses yet. Maybe he can finish before it's over.
One of the guys that I, as you know, and again, Bob knows this, I've played golf since I was 9 years old. I've occasionally played at a pretty high level. I love golf. I am steeped in the history of the sport. Brandel Chamblee is one of the smartest guys I've ever, from the Golf Channel, he's one of the smartest guys I've ever heard. I know he pisses people off, but he doesn't piss me off because he's smart. And he was saying on Saturday when Tiger, which went out in 30, okay, now comes these driving holes. He started with the 14th hole and 50, da 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 da. Okay. And he hit a couple crooked coming in. Yesterday, he drove the crap out of the ball, by and large, coming home. He just couldn't make anything. But Bob, when you listen to him after the game, there's always a reason why he didn't putt well, or he just was a little off with his irons. And again, this is so funny. I was writing my Sunday column and for the Daily News on Saturday morning, as I always do. And this is what I didn't know. He was 8 under par for the day at that point. This material never made it into the column, but I was saying somebody's got to get back to me the next time he has a big putt at 5:45 on a Sunday night.
All right.
Okay. And then I called Ian Fowers my Sunday and I said, okay, let's hold off on that for just a second, because it looks like he's trying to shoot about a 52 today at Sawgrass.
One thing that hasn't changed, even in his prime, and I was privileged to be there in the heart of it all.
Yeah, I was too. Yep.
I know. And we were privileged to be there. That's fine. He was a dog ate my homework guy.
Yes.
And even
yes.
In his prime, he was always a dog ate my homework kind of guy. So that hasn't changed.
And Bob, it will be very interesting, and I will be out there because it is my favorite golf course on the planet. And I believe that more than Pebble Beach or Augusta, Shinnecock Hills is the greatest championship golf course in the United States. It'll be very interesting to see when he gets on a U.S. Open course how he drives the ball. Because if he starts hitting it crooked, and Chamblee talks about how the one shot you better be able to hit in the modern world is a big, high draw, okay? And he has struggled with that, by and large, in this comeback. I'm going to be very interested to see how he plays at Shinnecock Hills because, Bob, you know this because you've covered him, okay? You know, you've been at the British Open where you could hit it all over the United Kingdom and still win, okay? It doesn't work that way at this country's national championship in golf.
No. So, I mean, it's not likely, but I'm just saying, I think if I'm just going to stick with what I'm saying, if he's just a jag now, that means he's got a puncher's chance.
Puncher's chance. Bob,
maybe not the major, but, you know, John Deere, hey, something. And it would be interesting.
And Bob, here's I'll leave this one more thing about Tiger, and then I want to make one more point about what we saw at the Players Championship yesterday. Aren't you constantly shocked, even when he's got it revved up and going good, okay, how he will make unforced errors with short irons still? When he made the, when he was, had all that momentum yesterday and gotten to within four, but I think it was before Webb made the birdie that kind of, that was the door slammer, other than being dry on number 17. And he just, he didn't hit it far enough, spun it back off the green like it was an Augusta National shot, and made a huge bogey at the time.
Yeah, right. No, yeah, no, that it was a little deflating. How's that a good word?
Okay, and here's my other thing. And I'm on this pulpit, and I was so happy to see my buddy Curtis Strange on this. I was tweeting this yesterday afternoon. I am so happy for Webb Simpson. I am so happy for Keegan Bradley, because they got screwed by the guys I call the Joint Chiefs of Dandruff in golf, okay, who made a completely arbitrary rule. About, not about, and Bob, I'm not even talking about the big broomstick putters that Longer and Adam Scott used. These kids had grown up thinking that these were the rules of the sport, and they had a slightly longer putter that they stuck in their bellies, okay? These are major champions who had their careers and their livelihood altered by guys sitting in a room over at the RNA or wherever the hell it was, okay? And so I am so happy that Webb Simpson, who played so beautifully to win a U.S. Open, was able to finally come back and find a putting stroke that's like half Matt Kuchar and half claw grip that works for him, and putted the lights out this weekend.
On this matter, Michael Lupica, you and I will have to continue to agree to disagree, because I applauded that move. My theory was, when you get to the Champions Tour and your first digit on your birth is a five, you can go to the belly putter. Detested the belly putter.
Yo, you hated the big long putter. You didn't hate the belly putter.
Around here, and I have every reason to root for Keegan Bradley and feel a little bit sorry for him, but hey, they never should have been doing it in the first place, and that's my story, Michael, and I am sticking.
That's like saying they never should have been hitting to the opposite field. Bob, let me just ask you this.
No, it's not.
Okay? Let me ask you this.
No, it's not.
They shouldn't have been doing it. Why? It was the rules of the sport. But let me just ask you this, Bob, okay? How come it's okay for them to use space-age technology so guys can hit 400 drives? That's okay. They won't scale back the golf club. They want Henrik Stenson and all these other guys to take three medals and hit them 350 yards. But they're going to protect the integrity of the sport because you can't stick a putter in your belly? Give me a break.
I'll let you have the final word.
All right. All right. Listen, before we get to, we will leave this on an extremely positive note, which is we're going to talk for a minute about the guy I call the Shohei kid. Not the Say Hey kid, the Shohei kid. But this time of the year brings us two things: graduations and Father's Day. And also Ryan saying boneheaded things about putters and the gifts that go along with them. Before you buy your dad another tie or that grad a balloon that will probably float away. And Bob, I try to read the copy. You know I try to be good, don't you? Who still gives grads balloons? Okay, ask yourself this. Does my dad or grad like wings or sports, or better yet, both? If the answer is yes, then get them a Buffalo Wild Wings gift card. Right now, if you purchase $30 worth or more in-store or online, they'll give you a $5 bonus to keep for yourself. That's a gift that gives back. How generous of you, Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Terms and conditions apply. All right, Ryan, I'm going to tee you up on this kid for the Angels. Okay, we are now a quarter of the way into the season. Shohei Ohtani has a 3.58 earned run average, six starts, struck out 11 guys yesterday and six and a third, 43 strikeouts in 32 innings. And to go along with that, Bob, he has a 3.48 batting average with five homers and 16 RBI. We have talked about this to a fairly well, but Ryan and I both love baseball deeply. This is probably the best time to be a baseball fan in recent memory because the young talent is so profound and deep in this sport. But, Bob, this kid is unique, and I hope the Angels make the playoffs for Mike Trout and for Shohei Ohtani because they both deserve that kind of stage in October for their it's wonderful for the game.
You know how they went to that regular season game in Williamsport, PA?
Yes.
The Angels have to go there because that's where this is where we all knew Little League. The pitcher was the best player on the team, and he batted cleanup. And this is the Little League, on steroids. let's face it, there's only one name that comes in mind, and it's funny, we're at the centennial of his conversion from pitching to hitting, George Herman Ruth. I mean, we haven't had a guy in 100 years, literally 100 years, who has been able to do this. We've had some fairly good hitting pitchers, you know, a few, but nothing like this. After a little bit of rocky spring training, he's everything they thought he was going to be. Now the question is, how do we manage this? You know, how often to pitch him, and how often? And so he's 24 years old. I don't think they should be babying him, man. I think they should be trying to get everything out of this they can. But oh, it's fantastic. It's fantasy. It's like you can't make this stuff up, kind of stuff.
Hey Bob, how about the fact that on the fly, in the whole new world of American professional baseball, he changed his batting stroke. I mean, he went from that big high leg kick to that toe tap. It's made a huge difference. And Bob, I've been trying to search my mind, and maybe you can add a couple of things to this. Okay. I remember when Vida Blue first came along, his starts became huge events. I can remember back in the day when he came into Boston and Sonny Siebert beat him for the Red Sox.
You mean on May 28th, 1971, Mike, on Friday night? That game you're thinking about when he was 9-0? That one? Is that the one you're thinking about?
Aren't you happy that I remember that, Ryan? Okay, and then there was Fernando Mania with Fernando Valenzuela. Doc Gooden in 1985, when he looked like the right-handed Sandy Koufax. But Bob, I can remember since Doc, in that time in baseball, very few event things like this. Appointment viewing, if you have the ability.
All right, I'm going to throw out one that was an event, but not a Strasburg.
Strasburg. Uh-huh.
That's about, you know, he was tremendously ballyhooed. I'd say he's the last guy, and we got to go back now how many years. But the whole package here is because he's not only is he accomplished, he's a major leaguer in both ways. There's no question about it. But he's a dynamic power pitcher, and he hits tape measure home runs.
Yep.
He doesn't hit little pop flies down the right field line, just sneaking inside the pole. He is bombs.
He's
exciting.
We'll just close this up by saying, if you are a baseball fan, and believe me, we're going to talk a lot of baseball across the late spring and summer and into the fall on this podcast, because Ryan and I do love it deeply, okay? Just, Bob, just consider yourself lucky to be a baseball fan at this time when I believe there is a renaissance going on with what you always call is the greatest game ever invented by mortal minds.
Yep. No, it's so many terrific young players. The only thing that disturbs me a little bit is I don't want to jump fully on the bandwagon of the not enough balls in play thing, but the strikeout,
yes.
I no longer bat an eye when someone strikes out a dozen. That's like, you know, I mean, it's just... The strikeout thing, that they are distorting the strikeout totals, but the game is still the game. You see highlights. Mookie Betts made a catch yesterday that saved the game. That if he doesn't make it, it's an inside the park home run, but he makes it. I mean, there's great plays. The defense, we're in so much the golden age of defense, the golden age of shortstop defense. I mean, it's never been better than this. There have never been better athletes playing this game than there are right now.
Bob, let me ask you this before we put a wrap on the Monday sports reporters. What can be done to put the strikeout genie back in the bottle so more balls are in play? Because I've tried to think of various rules. I don't know whether it's shrinking the strike zone, and I don't know, but it is off-putting that so few balls are in play compared to what's happened historically.
You used to be taught how to bat with two strikes and shorten it up and the strike and try to put the ball in play. And now it's not in vogue any longer. It's okay. Go for it. Take a rip. Do that uppercut swing. You might connect, and that's okay. You know, we don't mind. Better hit into a double play. I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, it combines with the home run thing. They go hand in hand. They go hand in hand. And I don't have an answer. I just hope that it can straighten itself out. The game has traditionally managed to figure itself out. But the strikeout totals, they really don't mean a lot anymore the way they once did. That's all I'm saying.
Well, this is the Monday, a wrap on the Monday sports reporters. Mitch went off about halfway through because he is tireless in his charity work, not just here in Haiti. We are here every Monday and Friday. We will have a lot more basketball to talk about on Friday than we did today. Game one, Rockets, Warriors Monday, the Celtics and Warriors, Cavs will resume. And for Bob Ryan and Mike Lupica, once again, thank you for spending time for what we consider to be an ongoing tradition in this kind of sports conversation. We'll talk to you on Friday.